Poetry on the Radio, poetry in and around the ACT. Today, the second of two episodes with Canberra poet and poetry publisher Shane Strange, plus The Rhyming Bugle, poetry news from the ACT region. I'm Kimberly K. Williams. As we noted last week, most poets in the Canberra region know a little about Shane Strange because he's the publisher at Recent Work Press, Canberra's cherished poetry imprint. We promised you last week that you'd hear, in the second episode, some of Shane's fine poetry, including some very witty, kind-heartedly satirical verse that is found in his two chapbooks, Notes to the Reader and Dark Corner, and in his collection from Recent Work Press in 2020, All Suspicions Have Been Confirmed. In addition to running Recent Work Press, Shane Strange is the Artistic Director of Queensland Poetry. Last week, we ended by asking Shane Strange about how writing about Japan for an anthology in which 10 poets wrote about cities around the world gave him a fresh perspective on the human occupation of space. One of the poems that is in that set of poems, it, just listening to you talk about sort of the way it had you looking differently in the area and the space that you were dwelling in, is the really simple one. Ceramics.
Yeah. So that Ceramics Hosomi Museum. It's this wonderful museum. You think, oh, well, going to look at a whole heap of ceramics would be dull as dishwater. But it's actually really fascinating because, of course, there's a really long history of ceramics in Japanese culture and the many various ways that they've been used and the various materials. And this was a real storehouse of that. And it was really good fun. Ceramics, Hosome Museum. 1. A porcelain bowl on purple cloth, a milky blue eye at its base, a box to carry it in. 2. The Maping vase shaped like a lover's hip, celadon in pale blue, inlaid with crane and cloud, draws the eye but forbids the hand.
There's that tension, right? Forbids the hand. Yeah. That's the thing when I'm in museums and I'm really taken with something, I want to touch it.
Yes, right. That's right, yeah.
What does it feel like? What is its temperature? What is its texture?
You cannot touch.
Cannot touch. I have a kind of a strange question, but what is with the number 8? Do you know that number 8 comes up a lot in your work?
Yeah, it's really good. I was actually writing a series of poems around the number 8. It was just a kind of interesting challenge. Why 8? I really like octopuses and and you know the number of ways. It's kind of like the thing when you buy a particular brand of car, you suddenly see all different cars. You know, the same car. It becomes very aware.
Right.
So when I said, maybe I want to write things about the number 8, then suddenly all these things sort of came into view about the number 8.
That would be an interesting anthology. It would be to assign people numbers.
Well, we did. That's
part
of the reason.
Oh, has that been
done? Yeah. We actually did.
Sad.
With a couple other poets. This is, we did 5, 6, 7, and 8, and we all had 10 poems to write or something like that.
Shane Strange reads Uses of Poetry 8. It's about people operating war drones remotely, far from any battlefield.
Uses of Poetry 8. You begin service in an unnamed base in the Nevada desert, about an hour from Las Vegas. You fly unmanned airborne vehicles over countries in the Middle East and Africa with the purpose of making poetry of enemies of your country. Due to the time lags in the satellite connection and the fog of war, it is rarely clear you have achieved the aim of any mission, and you are haunted by the growing suspicion you may have inadvertently made poetry of innocent civilians, children, the elderly, as they go about their everyday lives. In time, this suspicion turns into a neurosis that leads to an early but honourable discharge. Procedure dictates you are handed an envelope by your commanding officer. The envelope contains the number of poems you have either made or assisted in being made through your actions. You suspect the number is large. You open the envelope. This poem came from a radio documentary about people who fly unmanned drones in a base outside of Nevada, and it was about, you know, their trauma. They weren't actually in country and fighting, mm-hmm. but they had this weird experience of being very distant from the battlefield, and yet, you know, having this kind of almost video game like control over something, and often they were the lives of people. And yeah, apparently when you were discharged, you were given an envelope with how many people you'd killed in it.
No.
Yeah. It seemed quite a brutal thing.
Why?
I don't know. I don't know. You know, it was just part of the thing. It was quite chilling, I thought. And it had an effect on me. And at the time in the prose poetry, with this group of prose poets that I was working with, we were talking about, a lot of the poems were about the use of poetry. So, and I wrote a few in response. But this one, I think, stuck with me, because you could hear the trauma in the voices of these people who weren't in country, weren't fighting as you might think.
But
had such an odd experience of fighting a war. But one of the things I was really interested in was that sense of distance and the inability to reconcile what was happening in real life and the kind of very distant perspective that they had. There was that tension, I think, yeah.
It's yet another take on space, really.
Yeah.
Right? This idea of just disjointed or just space. And,
And you know, I'm often interested in the effects that, you know, of trauma, of doing, particularly in relation to jobs, you know, having to do a job that is so traumatic for various reasons. I think, you know, that the distance that they had from, you know, the actual, the abstraction from the actual killing, from the actual, what you might think a soldier's job is. I think that was, you know, they're completely, you know, they're not even on the same continent, you know, and that must be, I felt for them, you know, it must be horrible.
Yeah. In another affecting poem, Shane writes about Laika, the dog who went into space in 1957 with the incipient Soviet space program.
This came out of another anthology project. We were celebrating the moon landing anniversary. The 50th year of the moon landing was coming. So again, we got a group of poets together to write two poems about that. And it was a really fascinating project. Yeah, it's called Conspiracy Theory. Laika, the space dog, did not die from poisoned food or disintegrate upon re-entry, but from overheating caused by a malfunctioning thermal unit. That was a secret for 45 years. Laika, the space dog, possessing smell 40 times greater than ours, sensed posthumanly the atmosphere's smaller and smaller cage before dying from overheating. Laika, the space dog, did not die, but watches from orbit, expanding to the size of an asteroid, a canine umbilical dangling into the upper atmosphere, like a lost fetus in Kubrick's 2001.
Poetry on the Radio producer Peter Monahan observed.
My sense of you is that you're a satirist, but not one dripping in venom, gentle in a sense as well, and accepting and loving of human beings despite their insanity, that they would do that to a dog.
Yeah, that's a really, that I think there's a lot of poems about Laika, and I think there's something very attractive about that story. And you know, that is beyond the kind of, you know, the given story of, you know, the first living thing in space or whatever, because the actual program was quite cruel. Like it didn't die from anything other than, you know, human error.
Human error and human vanity. You have the poem about Buzz Aldrin pissing on the surface of the moon, and then how much ego plays in things that humans do.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I think that's a really good observation. I guess I am interested in how humans act beyond the systems of the systems of things that seem beyond them, you know, that seem to be controlling or whatever. But, you know, I try to look for, I suppose, the real human activity in there. So, yeah.
At the end of last week's episode, we promised you some very amusing poetry from Shane. Here it comes. Sketches preparatory to an as-yet unwritten children's book is, I think, your best satire.
So funny.
That actually came from reading a student's work. They were writing a children's book, and every page, there's no illustration yet. You know, it's a story. So they're writing a children's book, and at the end of everything, it says show illustration. And I thought, well, you know, what might a children's book look like from a particular perspective, which wasn't really aimed for children.
Here's Shane reading at the 2022 Poetry on the Move Festival in Canberra.
Sketches preparatory to an as-yet unwritten children's book, 1 to 3. Young Duck is getting ready for his first day at school. Mother Duck is quiet. "Why are you quiet, Mother Duck?" asks Young Duck. "Because," says Mother Duck, "I equate significant milestones in your life with the inevitable narrowing of opportunities in mine." "It is unfair, I know, but I need a moment to retrieve myself from the existential angst that, if left festering, might consume me." Show illustration. Junior Bear is helping Papa Bear. Together they are building a letterbox. "Look at the letterbox. It is a red letterbox." Junior Bear asks, "Papa Bear, why is the letterbox red?" "Because," Junior Bear, begins Papa Bear, "in a class society, my labour is alienated to the point where I can only show my resistance through meaningless symbols of solidarity that mask my tacit complicity with the system." Show illustration. It is a lovely day in the park. Little iguana is flying a kite. Look at it soar. Baby turtle is getting older. Look at her mature. Little crocodile is playing with lipstick. Look at him experiment. Junior panda knows she really likes girls. Look at her hiding. Papa and Papa iguana are watching little iguana. Look at them overturn preconceptions. Little baby possum feels responsible for her parents' divorce. Look at her self-blaming. Daddy ocelot feels weighed down by the tropes of masculinity. Look at him conform. It is a lovely day in the park. Show illustration.
Shane had his audience going, and no less with his sequence about prefaces to imagined books. His Notes to the Reader is in his chapbook of that title.
This little book that I made was inspired by a line from a novel in, a preface, a note to the reader in a Clarice Lispector novel, The Passion According to G.H., and it was the first thing. It said, "This book is like any other book. but I would be happy if it were read by people whose soul was already formed. I thought, fuck you, Clarice Lispector. But it did inspire me to think about, you know, other such notes to the readers for other such books that, you know, might have such a note in the front. This book can only be comprehended by animals. Its meanings vary according to the level of domesticity. Cats, dogs, goldfish, budgerigars, guinea pigs, etc., are convinced the book is about suburban decay. Wilder animals, kangaroos, tigers, larger species of moth, monitor lizards, maintain it revolves around the protagonist's struggle to transform against overwhelming odds. Some smaller forms of bird life and most major reptile families ask that we look to the minor characters to understand the text, while more obscure arthropods suggest that we look to what the text does not say. Newer discoveries are being made daily by as yet unnamed sea creatures in the depths of the Indian Ocean, though their reading practices are thought to rely too heavily on the Russian formalist school. There's one line left. Animals bred to be eaten, cows, chickens, pigs, etc., are merely grateful for the distraction. Yes. This book is a list of instructions and exhortations. Become fitter, lead a more fulfilling life, earn more money, be loved, be more spiritual. To be more productive, you must set and achieve goals. To achieve dreams, you must accept defeat. To compromise, you must comply. To be happier, you must look at the long durée. You must ameliorate promises, take the letter of the law, if not the spirit. Divide your time into smaller and smaller parts. Sell it off. See things in abstraction. Be a team player. Stay positive. It will end soon. It will all end soon. This book was written in the minutes after waking and before preparing breakfasts and school lunches for children. As such, any seemingly unfinished sentences, rushed passages, cliched characters, or fragmentary plot lines may be taken as evidence that the author exists outside the text. Stains from various foods may be found on some pages. This book will bring forth memories of childhood. The reader should be prepared, as these will neither be the saddest or happiest moments, but the most mundane. Waiting for dinner to be served, waiting for parents to return from work, waiting for the school day to end, waiting to leave the supermarket, waiting for the sun to come out, waiting to be grown. It will become clear that childhood was composed of interminable periods of boredom and frustration. This realization will force the reader to re-examine the purpose of their lives. Someone will call to say a relative has died. That wasn't funny.
We couldn't let Shane Strange go without asking him more about recent work press. Chiefly, how does he manage its extraordinary output and its quality? Unsurprisingly, Shane revealed, recent work press runs on sweat equity. He edits manuscripts, works with illustrators on the book's design, and sees them through publication, and makes it look easy, although, of course, it's not.
Recent work press is so prominent in Canberra poetry publishing and in the region. How do you do it? Yeah, the poetry world, the publishing world is sort of so underpinned by costs, considerations and challenges, stresses and so forth.
How do I do it? I dedicate a lot of free time to it. And we've been doing it since 2015. The reason that it came about was partly I was working with a lot of poets, and there were a lot of poetry things happening in Canberra, you know, in a way that I didn't really see in where I came from in Brisbane, you know. And it seemed to be really valued. And I also saw there were a lot of poets who weren't, you had to rely on the sort of the good favours of presses in Sydney and Melbourne and wherever they are. And it seemed to me to be a great source of neglect for Canberra poetry particularly. So basically I figured out a way that I could do it that wasn't excessive in costs and, you know, could maintain itself. And I don't know, I think we may have had a small impact on poetry publishing, but yeah. So yeah.
One of the things it's really brought home to me is how rich the writing scene is here, poetry scene. Is it comparable in other cities in Australia? Is there something idiosyncratic about Canberra?
What I think is idiosyncratic about Canberra poetry is that it is reasonably unified. There isn't that tension and fracture lines between different forms of poetry and different poets that you find in other larger cities. So I think I'm not saying it's homogenous, but I'm saying it's more united, you know. So, you know, you'll go to a slam or go to a reading somewhere and you know, you'll enjoy it as much, and there isn't that sort of tension around that you can find in other cities. In my book, I think the poetry community of Canberra, and I think a lot of people I've heard are very grateful to the educated and poetry-loving audience that is in Canberra. I think there's probably, in Melbourne, there's probably a more vast range of poets and due to its population, but I think the good thing about Canberra poetry is its supportiveness. So, yeah. And that was one of the things I found before I started Brisbane Work Press was, you know, so many people were into poetry here, a lot of people were writing poetry, and there were venues and spaces where poetry was being done. And it doesn't seem weird in Canberra to sort of flip between different parts of poetry, you know. And so, yeah, I think that's a real virtue. Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
I can only say, as somebody who came from the outside, that how poetry is appreciated, valued, and how it's done in such an inclusive way here.
Yeah.
It's remarkable.
Yeah, it is, yeah. It's much more open to giving new people a chance.
And yes.
You can find, not so much find an audience, but you can find a way of doing poetry that doesn't feel like you're sort of transgressing anything, but feels part of a community. So I really like that about the Canberra poetry scene, yeah.
He publishes many books each year, and while each is distinctive, recent Work Press books have a consistent look and feel. Shane admits that part of his motivation in becoming a publisher was that he wanted to try his hand in book design, to create books as pleasant objects.
You know, it's time-consuming to, to edit and lay out and publish everyone's book, and there's a lot of plates spinning at once, but I think the results are beneficial. I think it has been beneficial. Yeah.
I actually am glad you said that, because one of the things I had meant to mention is just how easy you make it look. Mm. Truly, you do. Mm. I mean, it's like magic in a way, and yet it's the Wizard of Oz, right? who's the man behind the curtain? Yeah.
It you know, I'm you know, I like poets and you know, I want to publish their books, and you know, I want them to feel supported. So I think it's important.
One of the things I find so impressive about the output that you have is that the books all look like their own book, and yet taken as a whole, they all look like recent WordPress books. Mm-hmm. So that really takes some doing to have that kind of consistency at the same time as each book comes out as, you know, idiosyncratic.
Yeah. Thanks. Yeah. I mean, look, one of the reasons I started doing it was because I wanted to fiddle around with book covers. You know, it's like, you know, it was like I really wanted to, you know, I wanted to make things, you know, and making a book seemed like a very nice thing as an object to do. And so, yeah, I mean, I'm glad there's, you can never tell, you know, what a vibe is or whatever, but I'm really glad that there is some consistency, yeah. I guess these are about intimacy, but not as you know it. At the line of motoring, unvarying they hold us, the silent lines of streets cast stone onto stone. We have returned to find versions of ourselves, caught in light, understanding we are not what we were, but so close we can touch, our skin made of spirals, combining and recombining like bugs caught in sunlight on a field, or plankton caught in the eddy of a moor, waiting like sunset to close everything in the absence of light. Yeah, no laughing now. Conscious uncoupling. We have a new apartment, tiny old ruin, the sound of water, an intricate medallion. I adored the elevator, startled myself, removed a scar from the drawer. Joseph was still at the table, slapped like an academic. His son at the doorway kissed me, but it was a rule of the theater. I would sleep, still sleep at night, to the sound of the river and vehemently denied actions.
On this episode of Poetry on the Radio and the preceding one, we've talked with Shane Strange.
The Rhyming Bugle. On Monday, August 7 at Smith's Alternative at 7 p.m, Jeff's Poetry presents Lisa Gorton and Theodore L. Lisa Gorton is a poet and novelist, essayist and reviewer, whose first poetry collection, Press Release, won the Victorian Premier's Literary Award for Poetry. Her second, Hotel Hyperion, was awarded the Philip Hodgins Memorial Medal. Her third, Empirical, was shortlisted for the Prime Minister's and New South Wales Premier's Literary Awards for Poetry. And her fourth, Mirabilia, was shortlisted for the New South Wales Premier's Literary Award for Poetry. Theodore L. co-founded and was a co-editor of the international journal Contrapasso magazine. His book, A Voice in the Fire, 2015, dealt with unknown Italian anti-fascist writing. His first collection of poems, Beginning in Sight from Recent WordPress, was published in 2022 and won the Ann Elder Award. The evening will have no open mic, but will have a Q&A with the poets after their readings. Poetry on the Radio is produced weekly on unceded Ngunnawal country in the studios of ArtSound FM. Series hosts are Kimberly K. Williams and Peter Searles, who produced the program with me, Peter Monahan. Poetry on the Radio is heard each Sunday at 4:30 p.m. and again at 10:30 p.m. on Mondays. Find out more on the Poetry on the Radio page under the Programs tab at artsound.fm. The music on today's program is from Colaparte, by the Dutch cellist Ernst Reisiger. Our theme is an imagining of an ancient Greek hymn to the muse Calliope by Gregorio Paniagua and the Atrium Musica de Madrid.